Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. Today we have Sylvia Puente, who is president and CEO of the Latino Policy Forum, which is located in Chicago, Illinois. And I cannot wait for the conversation that we're going to have today. Sylvia is president and CEO of the Latino Policy Forum, which is a nonprofit that works for equity, justice, and economic prosperity on behalf of Latinos through public policy advocacy and analysis on issues including education, housing, and immigration. Over more than a decade at the helm of the forum, Puente has grown the organization into a central voice on Latino issues and has established herself as a thought leader in the arena. Puente is frequently cited as an expert on Latino issues and has published numerous reports and articles that articulate the vital role they play in society. She has been recognized by Hispanic Business Magazine as one of the 100 most influential Hispanics in the U.S. Hello, welcome. Bienvenido, Sylvia. How are you today?
Good. Good to see you, Ramona. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation as well.
Man, I can't wait to have this conversation with you. Today, we're going to talk about the civil unrest of 2020 and how the Latino Policy Forum is addressing many of the issues of systemic racism, as well as advancing Black-Brown relations. So could you begin by telling our audience a little bit about yourself and your background, where you're from, and how you got to this place, and what's the work you've been doing?
Sure. So again, Sylvia Puente, I'm a born and raised Chicagoan, whose both of my parents came from Texas as farm workers, and their families settled in Chicago in the 1950s. And because they were farm workers, they were very involved with the United Farm Worker Movement. And that really gave me at a very young age a sense of activism of how you can create change and how we each have a responsibility to create equality and justice in society. My mother took me to my first picket line when I was 13 years old. So in some ways, I think I've had no choice but to be an activist. But I learned it wasn't until my third job out of college and I was working in state government in the budget office. I took a very demanding, challenging job to learn as much as I could, that I realized that there was this discipline called public policy. And this is about 40 years ago already, Ramona, so, you know, some decades have passed since then. And being a first-generation college student, without a lot of role models or examples, I didn't know that a discipline called public policy existed. But when I heard about it, I said, oh, that's what I've been wanting and doing my whole life. Because public policy are the tools of economics and analysis and data to really identify what are key issues and concerns, what is the measure or the chasm of equality or inequality, and how do we address it? And that really then has launched my career for pretty much most of the past 30 years, working in various organizations, the past 11 with the Latino Policy Forum, in the pursuit of Latino equity. And I think given the times that we're in, I really am pleased that Chicago, I'm sure most of your readers know, is probably one of the most segregated cities in America, and if not the most segregated city. And while we certainly are committed to advancing Latino equity in education, in housing, in immigration, 5 years ago, we started planning a leadership academy that would bring together Black and Brown community leaders in Chicago for conversation, for dialogue, for trust building, but also to specifically talk about how do we really improve our city. Now, 5 years ago when we were planning it, I wouldn't have imagined that we would have had four successful cohorts now of over about 100 leaders. And I couldn't have imagined the times that we would be in when we would really need to be calling on our community leaders to really address the Black-Brown dialogue in Chicago, but also some Black-Brown tension in Chicago. And we really have fostered a group of emerging and established community leaders that are working together to make Chicago a better city.
Now you talk about your work in terms of how you began in activism. Is through the farm worker movement and how that has progressed over time. And as we have all witnessed, 2020 has been an amazing year in terms of beginning public conversations about the issues that we've always been working on. But all of a sudden, now people are really beginning to have those corporations in all environments, right? The corporate environment, in terms of public policy, in terms of economics, all these issues are becoming public. I don't know if you saw the recent study by Citibank that the U.S. has lost $16 billion. I have to look it up. Because of racial discrimination in the workplace. We know that, at least this is my first time seeing this in my lifetime, that Biden, who is the presidential candidate, has a policy specifically for African Americans and specifically for Latinos. You know, we're never center a policy, right? But we're really beginning to see these conversations about dismantling systemic racism and structural inequality. So these conversations have evolved, although there are many of us who've been in the front lines from the very beginning. Can you talk about your perspective and how the changes you've seen, because I'm sure you've had some experiences where people don't want to have those conversations because you've been in the field for a while, and now we're willing to have those. Can you address that?
Sure. So let me just back up a second and say a word more about the Latino Policy Forum. You know, we're a small nonprofit in Chicago that primarily focuses on public policy issues in the pursuit of Latino equity. So how do we, in education, how do we get more both Black and Latino teachers in front of our students? Because we know that's going to improve student outcomes. So we're working with our state legislature to come up with a policy on that. In the midst of the COVID crisis, we were fortunate that in Illinois, our General Assembly allocated another $400 million for home ownership and mortgage relief for those that were impacted by COVID. We worked very hard, along with many others, to try to get those resources allocated, and then worked with the State Department to determine how they would be implemented and who would have access. And we're very happy that, you know, Illinois is a strong blue state, that there was an awareness that everyone should be eligible for those resources, regardless of their immigration status. And recently, our state legislature also allocated an increase of $60 million in resources to be dedicated primarily to immigrants in Illinois, because many immigrants did not have access to any of the federal stimulus dollars, nor did they get that increase in unemployment. So most of our work is really around how do we address these big looming public policy issues to have more resource investment and equity in the Latino community. In addition to that, as I mentioned, we have this Leadership Academy that brings together African American and Latino community leaders, which really is, you know, public policy work is hard. Building bridges of leadership and promoting cohesion and unity really can be very fun and joyful. But as I've been thinking about where we're at as a nation, where we're at in our city with all the civil unrest, you know, and I'm of an age and a stage, as I think I mentioned, I went to our state capitol and lived in our state capitol. And anyone who knows Springfield, it is not very welcoming to people of color. four decades ago. So if it's that way today, imagine what it was like then. And I mentioned that I have, really as an activist and through all of my career, really have focused on how do we have equity for the Latino community. And as I've been just reflecting on the civil unrest, so all that is to say, I'm a baby boomer. I'm of that age and stage, you know, where I'm looking back more times than I'm looking forward, even though obviously there's still a lot of work to be done. I really need to acknowledge and give thanks to the young people that I've seen marching on the street for teaching me some lessons, right? And as I think about it, two of those reflections and two of those lessons really stand out for me. So while I've been sitting at tables for four decades talking about equity and what do we need to have equity and how do we close equity gaps, in those four decades, it was very rare that we could ever use the language of systemic, and it was very rare that we could ever use the language of structural racism, institutional racism, and white supremacy. If I would have used those words at tables even a decade ago, I would have been questioned as to my legitimacy or was I being too radical. So I really need to give props. And one of my lessons learned from the young people is that they have released whatever it was that was holding back our being able to use that language in everyday dialogue and in everyday rhetoric. So our everyday rhetoric now is allowing us to clearly say, hey, it ain't just about inequality and how do we close the opportunity gap? It is about how do we change institutionalized racism, systemic racism? How do we address white privilege? And how do we deal with white supremacy? Because that really is the underbelly of this quest for equity that in my world, I was never able to say in polite company. And now I feel it's the young people that have really pushed out that vocabulary because of the education they've had. I mean, when I was growing up, there wasn't the analysis of neoliberalism. There wasn't the analysis of all of these things that I think have contributed to this rhetoric. But I think, you know, while some people may say nothing really happens, the change doesn't happen through talk, and I agree, actions need to take place for change to really happen. Actions can happen if you don't have the rhetoric, if you don't have the framework, mm-hmm. if you don't have the way of defining it. Mm-hmm. So I feel that we have really moved leaps forward in this conversation, that we can now put those words on the table. And I'm sitting at boards with a lot of privileged white men who read the book White Fragility and had a hard time with it and really struggled with it. And it was just so interesting to watch because now I can say them and in a board meeting when they say something inappropriate, I can say, you know, I have to say, I think there's a little bit of white privilege going on here in that statement, right? You know, I can call them out on it in ways that I felt it's given me permission to be even more emboldened in that pursuit. And again, I give props to our young people on the streets for making that happen. And it's teaching me some lessons. The other thing that I've been thinking about too in this whole conversation, and I've learned a lot of this from some of the folks that have gone through our leadership academy, is, you know, my background is in public policy. You know, public policy is about the data, the analysis, the numbers, you know, the facts matter. I believe the facts still matter. But that you can't dispute the data, right? And that's how I've led the Latino Policy Forum. That's how what I've been able to do for most of my career and doing analysis and presenting the measures of equality or inequality and then saying, well, what do we do to address this, right? Because I think we all agree that this inequality shouldn't exist. And I've always believed, and I learned this lesson maybe about 20 years ago, that I can't help heal my community. I can't help improve my community if I am not personally healed, if I am not doing my internal work about what are and how those systems of oppression and those systems of white privilege and, you know, my being the first one to go to college in five generations, if I'm not looking at how that has impacted me. I didn't have the words to say my internalized trauma necessarily, which is another lesson I'm learning from these young people, but I've always believed that. And so I have spent a big part of the past couple of decades doing that internal reflection, learning how to meditate, taking classes, thinking about that. But for me, it was always private. I didn't bring that into my public role or into my public space. And so I am in some ways in awe of the young people, again, the young people on the street, the younger people that were in our leadership academy, that they said their community project of Black Brown Unity was going to be to form a women's group to talk about and heal and discuss and resolve our internal trauma, because we can't do it for anyone else unless we understand our own internalized trauma and we can release it. And I remember thinking, oh, they're going to do that in public? And now I'm seeing our leadership academy, they're doing peace circles, and they're doing, they did a beautiful event where they brought together the Aztec dancers and African dancers to talk about cultural pride, right? And as I mentioned, they're running meditation circles and peace circles, and they're bringing all of that, what I consider to be private, into the public space, which I think is a breaking of another barrier of what we need to do to heal ourselves and to heal society. So again, one of my reflections is I just give tons of credit and props and gratitude to people certainly younger than I for having that awareness and saying that at this moment in time that we're in around the civil unrest, we have to deal with the external systemic issues of institutionalized racism and structural racism and white supremacy, but we also have to understand what that has done to our own psyche, what the damage it's done to our own communities, to our families, and how do we heal our internalized trauma? How do we heal our psychic wounds? How do we move forward so that we can meditate, that we can be peace circles, and we can really think about how do we really foster this conversation of unity between Black and Brown communities.
I really like you sharing, I appreciate, excuse me, you sharing that information about these healing circles. You know, in the American culture and society, as you know, we were founded by the separation of church and state, right? And so we look at the whole process of our politics being separate from what we do and feel spiritually. And, right. And that's not who we are as a people. Spirit is very much a part of us as well as our intellectual and physical selves, right? And right. So when we talk about healing, it's very empowering to deal with the spiritual component of healing and bringing that cultural experience into the healing process, to have dancers, music, our culture involved in saying, hey, we need to deal with our own selves and our own spirituality and our own healing in order to be able to help this society and country heal. That, right. You know, you cannot expect that you will do the best work that you can do if you're broken down, right?
Exactly. And how can you give what you don't have, right? And how can you have a healed society if you're not healed, right? How can you have a healed society if you're still deeply wounded? And, you know, most of us are wounded in some way or another, right? So how do we even explore that, acknowledge that, and figure out how to address that? So for me, I really just see that we have really shifted, at least in our rhetoric, in our ability to speak truths, right? And I've always seen myself as a truth teller, and I've always spoken the truth. But now I have these additional layers of being able to talk about the structural racism and able to talk about how do we deal with our white privilege, but also then what do we need to be doing? As we're thinking about education policy, we need to be thinking about the trauma the children are experiencing when they're coming into schools and how we're gonna address that, right? As we're trying to address immigration policy, what is the trauma that's being inflicted on communities who are being constantly policed and under threat of, you know, being deported and separated from their families, right? So that we need the public policy solution, which I've always been fervent about, and I've spent, you know, most of my career being focused on. But we also need this other solution that brings us to this humanity, the spirituality, and takes us into our inner self in order to heal the world around us.
Thank you. For the last few moments that we have, I know you mentioned a little bit earlier about the Latino Policies Forum Multicultural Leadership Academy and your work in Black Brown relations. Can you tell us a little bit about that you've been doing?
So we just finished our fourth cohort, and it is a 10-day leadership program that brings together Black and Latino community leaders from our neighborhoods throughout Chicago. And as I mentioned, Chicago is a very segregated city, and our feeling is that unless there is intentional relationship building, it doesn't always happen on its own. And there are examples of where we have seen it in other communities, but our leadership program is different even from a lot of other leadership programs that are emerging in our city, because we talk about what does it mean to be a Black or a Brown leader in this society. We talk about what is our history and how our history is the same and different. We spend a lot of time doing trust building so that we really can think about how do we facilitate change. So it's less a program around skills building of strategic plans and budgets and those kinds of things, and really focused on what we like to think about as transformative leadership, right? There's a lot of internal reflection in terms of how we build and design our 10 days of leadership, so that the participants are really connected to each other. And then each class breaks into cohorts to really undertake a project of community change. What are they going to do to address an issue of community change from a Black and a Brown perspective, right? What is the intersection? Because they can each do it in their neighborhoods, but if they do it in their neighborhoods, it can stay siloed as Black or Brown. So how do we really foster the integration and the cooperation around that? So as I mentioned, they've done healing circles, they've done meditation circles, but they also are putting together a conference on economic empowerment and wealth building. And how do we do that in Black and Brown communities with our entrepreneurs and with some of our neighborhood folks, right? They're also, I think, very bravely taking on this issue of some of the tension that exists between Black and Brown communities and challenging even the Latino participants, challenging some of their loved ones around this a concern around anti-Blackness that exists in Latino communities. But they're having, and they're putting together real conversations and real opportunities to explore these issues and figure out how we move forward as a city.
This sounds like really interesting and necessary work for our communities. You know, we have our own bigotry and feelings about each other that we need to work through and deal with and transform, right? You talk about transformative leadership. Transformative leadership can make transformative change, right?
That's the idea.
Yeah. And so anyway, it's great to hear about the work of the Latino Policy Forum. I am absolutely delighted to have you as a guest today. And I want you to come back because there's so much that we need to explore and talk about in terms of specific issues. You know, this was kind of like a macro level conversation,
right?
But really getting into the micro and making a way for the Latino Policy Forum to actually speak to our audience, which is all over the country. And maybe they can take some of the ideas of the work that you do and implement them in our individual communities throughout the country.
Yeah, we're documenting the various components of our Leadership Academy. So we hope to be able to share that more in terms of the different components and the exercises that we do. So, yeah, I'd be happy to and be delighted to come back.
Thank you. And so one of the books she did mention is White Fragility. That's a book that you can check out. Also, I mentioned the Citibank report that was just recently released. And I misquoted it, but I do have the name of it. It's Closing the Racial Inequality Gaps, the Economic Costs of Racial Inequality in the U.S. and it's actually 16 trillion and not 16 billion. So anyway, for those of you who are interested in exploring that particular article, please check it out. You can find it online.
And let me just mention one other book, since we're talking about books. A lot of our Leadership Academy is predicated on a pioneer in this work, Dr. Juana Bordas, who wrote a book called Salsa, Soul, and Spirit. And she interviewed Salsa, Latino, Soul, African-American, and Spirit Native American leaders, and has a paradigm of leadership that really says, as people of color, we already are in, have leadership in our DNA that comes from our communities of origin and our cultures that we often don't recognize as leadership qualities and attributes. And that book really has set a foundation for how we think about leadership in the communities of color that we work with, and that we're already leaders. We're just not often naming it, claiming it, and our leadership qualities are not often acknowledged by dominant society. But to be the, you know, how do we have the confidence in knowing that we're those leaders as we walk in the world, as we seek to make change, and as we seek to improve our communities?
Thank you. Salsa, Soul, and Spirit, which is all about embracing your own leadership, empowering yourself as a leader in terms of looking at your culture and the history of your culture. Thank you so much, Sylvia. Can't wait to have you back and continue our conversation.
Thank you, Ramona. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today.
And thank you to the Latino Policy Forum for all the work that you do.
So latinopolicyforum.org. Go to our website, sign up for information, sign up for all of our social media to be kept in the loop.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Hello, today I have Sylvia Puente of Chicago, Illinois, who's going to give us some one piece of advice to help students succeed in college. Hi, Sylvia, how are you today?
I'm great, Ramona. So good to talk to you.
So tell us, what colleges and universities did you attend, what your major, what majors were, and then also share with us one piece of advice you would have to ensure that students succeed in college.
Sure. So I'm from Illinois, and I'm a first generation college, first person in my family to go to college, even though my family is from Texas and had five generations in Texas. And all I knew about college was that I was going to go to the best school in Illinois. So that was University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. And I knew that I wanted to know more about data and analysis, so I majored in economics. And then my third job out of college, I learned about this discipline of public policy. And I'd always been an activist, and public policy was the link to how to, for me, and the tools for how to create societal, to address societal inequality, which is what I had always done as an activist. So I said, public policy, oh, that's the graduate degree I'm going to get. And I want to tell your listeners, if there's no direct path, I started a public policy school, and I actually was admitted to Harvard and went to the Kennedy School of Government for a two-year master's program. I came home for the summer, and motherhood intervened, and I had to make some life choices and decisions. So they put me on hold at Harvard, but it just was really hard to go back being pregnant and what am I going to do and all of that. So then I went back to graduate school when my daughter was 18 months old, and I had to go to the University of Chicago to the Harris School of Public Policy. But I didn't finish policy school till 10 years after undergrad. Right. So it was not a straight linear path for me. So so obviously my graduate degree was in public policy. So one of the things that I would say to all the students out there is believe in yourself and perseverance, because it was not easy to go back to public policy school twice. It was not easy to finish 10 years after my undergrad with all of what life gave me in between, marriage, a daughter, a house, a job. How do I manage? How do I do this? So believing in yourself and perseverance. And then the last thing I'll say, it's not that I'm so smart, but it's that I think I am. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I mean, it's I had the belief in myself. I had the confidence in myself. I knew that if I applied myself and worked hard, but not only could I persevere, I could excel, right? So when I went both to Harvard and the University of Chicago and I got A's, that obviously validated that I was smart, you know, and I have to say that was obviously personally rewarding to know that I could excel at that level. But it was obviously, you hear, the perseverance, the hard work, the tenacity. But more than anything else, it was the confidence and the drive I had that I wasn't going to quit and that I wasn't going to give up. And that's something that I would really say to any young person. You have to believe in yourself. You have to know that you can do it, even when others tell you that you can't.
Sylvia, point of great advice. Believe in yourself, persevere, think that you are smart, and have confidence in yourself. Mm-hmm. If you have all of these, you can definitely succeed in college, yes?
Of course, because I've seen so many smart young people, for whatever reason, get discouraged, and then they drop out of school or they don't go back. And it's not that they don't have the talent, right? But they didn't have, you know, there was something lacking. They believed what other people were telling them about them not being able to do it or the hurdles being too high. And I had hurdles, right? I mean, I went back to school when my daughter was 18 months old, right? I mean, I had a young baby. I was in graduate school, you know, but I'm like, I'll be damned. I'm going to get this degree because I was just bound and determined that that was a degree that I was going to get, right? And it definitely was not always easy. But it was that faith and determination and that confidence in myself that I knew that I could do this.
And thank you so much for sharing your own personal journey, because a lot of people think if you're not linear and you drop off for a minute, that all of a sudden you can't go back.
Right.
And everybody's path is not direct. It's not linear. You can always come back and you can always cross that finish line. Sometimes life just happens, you know, family happens, other things happen, but you still, if you believe in yourself and you persevere and you have that drive and confidence in yourself, you can still succeed.
And just one other little piece of that story, Ramona. So I had gone to Harvard and I didn't go back. So I went to the University of Chicago. The University of Chicago would not take my credits from Harvard. So again, another little hurdle. It wasn't little at the time.
And that was a hurdle, right? It wasn't little.
It was a hurdle.
Credits. Exactly. But you did it, right?
So that's, you know, I'm just sharing that. I don't often share this story, but I'm just sharing that where it's like, yeah, the University of Chicago wouldn't take credits from Harvard.
Harvard, of all the places, right?
So I had to do 3 years of public policy school to get a master's in public policy.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's not linear. Perseverance obviously really made a difference. And I learned a lot along the way.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. We appreciate all that great advice.
All right. So good to talk to you.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.